So last week we talked about the technique of noting, and I gave a guided meditation and a little instruction about noting, see, hear, and feel, or note anything, as I called it. And for those who weren't here and those who need a reminder, the sort of brass tacks is that we allow our attention just to rest, and something will draw our attention at some point. A sensation or a sound or a thought or an emotion or something. And at that point, we sort of swivel the spotlight of our attention to whatever that thing is and focus on it for a few seconds, get to know it a bit, and then release our attention and let that happen again, get drawn to something else and notice that. And we've divided up experience into these three categories of seeing, hearing, and feeling. So seeing would be obviously seeing, and if your eyes are closed, it's any thought that is visual in nature. Hearing would be hearing, or any internal thinking that is auditory in nature, so internal conversations or that song you can't get out of your head or sound effects of your dog barking in your memory. And then feeling is any physical sensation, either caused by external stimulus, heat or cold, or your clothes, or your heartbeat, or else emotionally rooted physical sensations like the tension you get when you're angry, or the tears you feel, the teariness when you're sad. And so every time we notice something coming to our attention and look at it, we'll say a little label if it's see, hear, or feel. And in that way, we're dividing up our experience and tracking in real time what is happening in this moment. Now, for those of you who are hearing this for the first time, fear not. We're going to take just about 5 minutes, and I'll do some guided see, hear, feel meditation just to get you back in the groove. And then the other thing is, if lots of things come to your attention at one time, just choose one thing to focus on. And if nothing comes up at all, you're not aware of anything, you're just waiting, then just note that as rest. Everything's being restful and enjoy that. And then I'm going to be talking about it again a little bit more afterwards. So hopefully it'll sort of come together for those that are new to it. So let's just do a couple of minutes of this technique, which is called noting. Noting is the technique of looking and labeling. See, hear, feel are the things that we're going to be noting. And also, I sometimes call it note everything or note anything. So find a comfortable position. And you can close your eyes or leave them open. If they're open, you want to be looking down towards the floor and let your gaze be soft, so that you're not distracted by what you're seeing. And just rest your attention. Don't go looking for anything. Just let your attention rest sort of in the center of where you're sitting. And when something draws your attention, maybe you notice that you're looking at the carpet, or you notice an itch, or you notice a thought. As soon as you become aware of something, turn your attention to that thing. Label it as either see, hear, or feel. You don't have to worry about the details of what you're seeing or what you're feeling. You're just distinguishing between seeing, hearing, and feeling. Spend a few seconds exploring that sensation or that sound or that sight. Get to know it a little bit, see what it's doing, and then let go of it, let your attention rest, and wait for something else to draw it. Could be the same thing again, or it could be something different. But you want to get into a rhythmic noting. So in the back of your mind, you might be noting, it might sound something like this. Feel. Here. Feel. feel. Each time I've said a label, I was noticing a sensation or a sound and turning my attention on it and just watching it, getting to know it for a few seconds. So go ahead and do that for a minute or so. Don't worry if it seems confusing or you're not really sure what you're doing. It'll take a little guesswork to get started. That's okay. It's just learning to make distinctions in our experience and to see the details of that experience. And remember, if nothing much is coming up, then you can just note rest. Enjoy that and wait for the next thing to come up. So I know that was really quick. That was just to sort of remind you of what we're doing. Did that pretty much make sense, at least in theory, to everyone? So today I want to talk more about the restful side. So I said that if there's nothing much coming up, nothing actively arising, you can note rest. Did anyone experience rest coming up and... Or I guess rest doesn't come up. Did anyone experience the absence of anything coming up that you could enjoy as rest? So we've divided experience into see, hear, and feel as active things that happen. We see things, and we hear things, and we feel things. Now, each of those have their own kind of rest. So if you don't happen to be seeing anything, say your eyes are closed or it's pitch dark and there's no visual thinking going on, then that's rest in the seeing space, in sight space, right? So we can call that see rest. So it may be that you can hear something, but there's nothing happening in seeing. So you would have a choice of hearing something actively or just noting rest in see space or see rest. And likewise, if it was silent or you're not aware of any sound, because that's all we can be aware of is what we're aware of. You know, if I forget my hearing aids, it doesn't have to be silent for me to hear rest. But silence, being aware that there's no sound coming up or being aware that there's no internal talking or auditory thinking, that would be hear rest. And similarly, not being aware of any sensations in your body would be feel rest, right? That's sort of all logical, makes sense. Now there's benefit to focusing on rest. We're focusing on what isn't happening. Actually, we're not very good at noticing when nothing at all is happening. For example, in our body, we might notice an itch or a pain or heat, maybe. But to not feel our body at all is sort of weird. But you might notice that you're very relaxed. And so there's not really anything active arising in your body, but you can feel relaxation. And we can call that rest. That's like relative rest. And the same with sight and sound. If your eyes are open but you defocus, so you're not looking at anything in particular, you're not really aware of specific things, it's just sort of blurry haze, we can call that sea rest. So it's relative rest. So this is actually a technique that can be quite pleasant to do. And if you'd like, we can do that for a few minutes so that you can get an idea of what I'm talking about. So if you'd like, once again, I won't be doing this for long, so you don't need to get too comfortable. Settle into your position, and with your eyes opened or closed, as you prefer, rest your attention in your body. And things will come to your attention, and this time we're going to choose not to pay attention to things that are active. So don't note, for example, my voice speaking. Obviously, you'll hear it, but you just let that be in the background. But if you become aware that there's nothing happening somewhere, at least relatively, then you can note rest. And in some ways, you can make this happen yourself. So if your eyes are open, you can defocus your eyes. Notice what that looks like to not be focusing on anything in particular, and you can note that as see rest. You can breathe in and relax your muscles, and then you can note relaxation of the muscles. It's a not active, a restful activity. So then you could note feel rest. And if anything arises spontaneously that you notice, you can note that as rest. I should say, if anything doesn't arise, if you spontaneously become aware of nothing happening somewhere, you can note that. When I stop talking, you might hear silence, and you can note here rest. So for a moment, let's just focus on restful things and let anything that's active be active, but just in the background. So for just a few seconds, let's note rest. See, hear, or feel rest. Now, you don't want to go searching for rest. But you can always create some rest with that out-breath, noticing the relaxation, or with the defocused eyes looking at nothing in particular. Typically, we don't create experiences in this style of meditation, but for the purposes of becoming familiar with rest, it's okay to create relaxation or visual rest, and then pay attention to that. Note it in the same way for a few seconds, pay attention, and then let go. So was that, how can I put that? Were you able to get a sense of that? Maybe some confusion or uncertainty, but you get an idea of what this rest is. I'll be doing a guided meditation of this in when we get to the first meditation period, so we can work with that some more. This is a really good technique to work with. You know, last week I was saying it's good to pay attention to what's going on in our experience moment by moment so that we can learn about what our experience is made up of. And we can break it down into smaller and smaller pieces. And now I'm saying, let's pay attention to what's not happening, which might seem like the opposite. But there are a number of good reasons for doing it. On a very practical level, some reasons would be that it's pleasant. It's typically a relaxing style of meditation. So if you're agitated or stressed or tired, you can do focus on rest, and it's generally pleasant. I won't say it's always pleasant, but generally you're going to find it to be pleasant. And at the same time, even if it doesn't feel like you're doing deep meditation, it might just feel like you're doing a relaxation exercise. All I'm doing is I keep breathing out and making myself relax, and how is that meditation? Well, it's still training your concentration, clarity, and equanimity skills, which I told you some weeks ago I would talk about ad nauseum, and here they are again, concentration, clarity, and equanimity, the three skills that sort of define meditation, either developing them or using them to observe experience. So you're doing some relaxing, you're also doing some pretty robust training in concentration, clarity, and equanimity. And that in itself is a pretty good reason to do it. Also, rest tends to self-perpetuate. So if you're focusing on pleasant relaxation or pleasant quietness or pleasant visual rest, that's pleasant, you focus on it, it tends to cause further rest. And so then you'll focus more on that, and that causes it to be even more restful. So you have both this feedback loop that gets more and more pleasant, so you want to keep on doing it, which is good. And it also has this tendency just to sort of automatically, over time, get into deeper and deeper states of restfulness. And these states of restfulness bring with them concentration, because the more restful you are, the less you are distracted, and so you're focusing more. So you remember, I think it was last week when I talked about the concentration practices, the jhana practices that were done before the Buddha became enlightened and before he made his own discovery. He was doing these concentration practices, which can get you into these states of elation or joy or bliss. These very pleasant concentration states can be got to through focusing on rest. Not initially, when all you're doing is consciously relaxing your muscles, but that's where you start. And you can get into these deep, pleasant states of concentration. Yet another practical use is, I've mentioned already, equanimity, concentration, clarity, equanimity. Equanimity is the ability to not really be bothered by other stuff, so you're not distracted by distractions. When you've got pains or itches, it's sort of okay. I mean, maybe it hurts and it itches, but equanimity is not fighting with it or grasping onto it. And restful states have a tendency to induce equanimity, because as you're becoming more restful, it's agitation is what makes things distracting and unpleasant, one of the things. So you're becoming more restful, the rest of everything is just sort of fading away for you, and you tend to drop into more equanimity. So if you want to work on your equanimity, rest is a great way to do that. Now that is actually just sort of the surface of why one might want to focus on rest. And I think that in itself is enough reason to do this practice. Actually, I think just being pleasant is enough reason to do this practice. But in fact, it goes deeper than that. So what will happen is that we start off just noticing the difference between what's active and what's less active, right? So itches and pains I'll call active, relaxation I'm calling restful. Right? Sound, my voice is active. When I'm not speaking, that's restful. So we learn that, and then we start, when we get good at that, then we can start noticing the difference between what's less active and what's even less active, right? So as our clarity skills increase, we start noticing that when I'm not talking, you can still hear maybe the hum of the lights. Or when you're relaxed, you might notice that some parts of your relaxation seem even more relaxed than others. So as your skill increases, you're able to see more and more subtlety of the restful states. So eventually what happens is that your distinguishing skill, your sensory clarity, becomes so sharp that you can detect just the subtlest little thing that's arising out of your deep subconscious, out of the nothingness of the source. These little sort of shimmers of visual activity and little whispers of auditory activity. And then when you can notice that, then you can start to notice when there's nothing at all. Like, nothing at all. And that nothing is absolute rest. It's nothing whatsoever. It's the nothing there to create a sense of self. There's nothing there to create a sense of other or separation. Therefore, there's nothing there to want. There's nothing there to not like. There's nothing there to judge. There's nothing there to cause suffering. There is just this perfect peace. Emptiness. It's the perfect quiet of the emptiness of the essential elements of being. And of course, this is hard to describe in words. Some people experience it as a sense of merging with everything, becoming one, or dissolving into nothingness and being experiencing lack of experience, you know, the no self in Buddhist terminology. In religious language, it's communion with God, possibly, or dissolving into love. You know, a lot of different ways of putting it. And this is something that is not just an unobtainable mystical ideal. This is something that is absolutely accessible to each of us. And as evidence of that, we see all over the history of religion that this experience is understood and encouraged. And so I've just got a few examples of it. It's different cultures will have different contexts, different languages, different religions will put it into, you know, their own framework. But the experience, the description, and often how to get there is very similar to this focus on rest that we just did in noticing the relaxation of the out-breath. So we can look back as far as the Bhagavad Gita, which was written around the time of the Buddha. They're not really sure exactly when it was written, somewhere between 600 and 400 BC. And it was one of the earliest writings of Hinduism, of Vedantic Hinduism. Looks like some people know more about Hinduism than I do. So a very early writing. And what I'm going to quote here is actually from a foreword by a scholarly translation of the Gita, because it would take too long to read the whole thing. But this quote is describing this one particular passage from the Bhagavad Gita. The mind is like a lake, and stones that are dropped into it, or winds, raise waves. Those waves do not let us see who we are. The waters must be calmed. If one remains quiet, eventually the winds that ruffle the water will give up, and then one knows who one is. God is constantly within us, but the mind obscures the fact with agitated waves of worldly desires. Meditation quiets those waves. So, sort of similar idea. If we move forward to the 1700s, to the Jewish mystics, the Kabbalists, specifically the Kabbalists of Tzfat, which is a city that I've actually visited, and it's really cool. So they were the mystical arm of Judaism, and they had a mystical understanding of Shabbat. So I'm sure you're all aware. Do we have any Jewish people or people who practice Judaism here? Nonetheless, I'm sure you're all aware that Shabbat is the day of rest. But to the Kabbalists, it was a ceremony and an experience much more than it is now. And they performed extensive rituals that aren't really performed anymore, because I don't think the Kabbalists are active except in a academic sense anymore, although I hope I'm wrong. Nonetheless, the influence of what they did is still seen in some of the prayer books. The Hasidic prayer books still have prayers that were taken from the rituals that the Kabbalists did. And so this is just an example of that. They say, Shabbat is unification through oneness. And this is what's actually read on a Friday night service in modern Hasidic Judaism. Shabbat is unification through oneness, which causes the mystery of oneness to dwell upon it. When the Shabbat begins, she is made one and separated from the other side, which is evil. So made one and separates from evil, and all the forces of severity pass away. She remains unified with the holy light. All the powers of ire and forces of severity are uprooted, and there is no evil dominion upon the worlds. So this is not so much sounding the same as the activity of focusing on rest, but it's getting to the same place. And it was, Shabbat was a time set aside by the Kabbalists to experience this merging with God and letting go of severity and evil, which is like we can feel in a deep restful state, that we're just surrounded by love, we're merged into goodness. So that's, you know, once again, a similar outcome. And the last thing I want to quote is Saint Teresa of Avila and her nine grades of prayer. So this is Orthodox Catholic, and perhaps some of you are familiar with the grades of prayer. Oh, I guess I'm the expert on everything tonight. So Saint Teresa describes these nine grades of prayer. Four of them are sort of intentional things you can do, like vocal prayer, and I don't know them all, but willful prayer. And then the other five are these mystical states of prayer that the Spirit of God leads you into. And she describes this as a journey from being a mortal person to union with God, takes you through these levels of prayer. Union with God and freedom from all earthly energies that hide us from the omnipresence of God. So what was interesting when I was researching this is I was really struck by the parallels of the descriptions of some of these states of prayer with some of the levels of different states that we go to through as we go deeper in meditation. But this particular grade 6 is the prayer of quiet, which I think is particularly relevant here tonight. Grade five is the prayer of infused contemplation, which is primarily about your intellect being touched by the grace of God. And grade six follows naturally on from that. And it's about the will being touched by the grace of God. And so what St. Teresa says is, from this recollection, being the prayer of infused contemplation, you're following all of this? From stage five, there sometimes proceeds an interior quiet and peace that are full of happiness, because the soul is in such a state that it does not seem to lack anything, and even speaking wearies it. It wishes to do nothing but love. And then she goes on and on about it. But again, it's that state of being content. You're not distracted. You're not wanting. You're not avoiding. You're surrounded by love. All you want to do is be loved. And this was, I don't know the historic era, but it was some time ago that St. Teresa was writing this. So all across the religions, we're seeing the same experience. We can do that without the religious context. Certainly use the religious context if you are participating in a religion. It's totally compatible with any religion you may participate in. But at the surface, it looks like guided relaxation, right? I'm just going to be telling you to breathe out and relax. But it's actually a good route to seeking transcendence and the very source of all that is. Now you have to start with the breathing out. You know, if I want to lift 150 pounds, I don't go to the gym and pick up 150 pounds. I pick up 5 pounds, and it might take a while before I can do 10 and then 20. But eventually you get there. And it all starts with just relaxing your shoulders.